irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. We will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, before we get to our guest, I want you to know that I am grateful to all of you that take your precious time to listen to or watch this show. Remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answers.network, download a copy, give it 21 days, and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. Now, I have a quote, but this one is not from the journal. It is, obstacles don't have to stop you. If you run into a wall, don't turn around and give up. Figure out how to climb it, go through it, or work around it. And that one is by Michael Jordan. Our guest today, Regina Louise, is the author of Permission Granted, Kick-Ass Strategies to Bootstrap Your Way to Unconditional Self-Love, which offers readers a proven path for defying expectations and loving oneself into a high-performing life. Her best-selling memoirs, Somebody's Someone and Someone Has Led This Child to Believe, were made into the award-winning Lifetime movie, I Am Somebody's Child, The Regina Louise Story, which was nominated for a 2020 NAACP Award for Best Director. Now, a summa cum laude graduate of the California Institute of Integral Studies with a master's in fine arts degree, Regina is a Hoffman Process teacher, workshop facilitator, and motivational speaker who lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. Her story has been featured in media outlets including NPR's All Things Considered, Good Morning America, the CBS Early Show, the Tavis Smiley Show, and many more. So Regina, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you. It's my honor to be here.
Thank you. It is my pleasure. I have enjoyed reading your story. And as you could probably tell with the quote that I started with, you didn't let anything stop you. And I think that's beautiful. But I think what I'd like to do is to have you share a little bit about your story so that some of the people here that are listening will understand some of the challenges that you went through. In fact, I'll share a little bit because Regina went from living in 30 foster homes, group homes, and psychiatric facilities before the age of 18. And she went from that to putting herself through college on a scholarship, writing two best-selling memoirs, and starting several successful businesses. So share a little bit about your story, because not many people can say that they went through that and came out the way that you did.
Yes. Thank you. Well, I think you said it best. I was born into a foster care-like situation back in the 60s, and I was never able to successfully reunify with either parent or relative or adult. So from as young as 11, until adulthood, I did not have a consistent adult or parent-like adult in my life. I grew up in a very institutionalized, regimented, medicated environment. and where any emotions were pathologized, any emotional state was considered the pejorative. So I was always in situations where whenever I had a broken heart, parents didn't show up, parents relinquished custody, a woman who wanted to adopt me wasn't allowed to because she was white and I'm black. Anytime those sort of major existential themes arose and I had a heartfelt, honest response to it, it was pathologized. And It has a lot to do with how bureaucracies can't rear children, because bureaucracies can't attune to the brokenheartedness that is occurring. And I was lucky because, first of all, my mother had to love me really solidly at some point in our relationship in order for me to be as solid as I was. So that was just a gift of being born. And somehow along the way, she gave me something. The attachment obviously was disordered, as well as it was an insecure attachment at best, but an attachment all the same. So what are the positives of an insecure attachment is that at least I had some idea of what that felt like.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And because I am who I am, I can remember being in solitary confinement and there were no windows, no handles on the door once inside. But at the threshold, at the bottom of the threshold, there was light always. And I would plant my future endeavors into the light. So I'm a writer because I remember saying, one day I'm going to tell. And then that became, I need to share this, you know, as I grew myself up. And basically, permission granted, kick-ass strategies to bootstrap your way to unconditional self-love. It's a blueprint for anyone who has been given up on, who has given up on themselves, like a good way to make what I've written relevant within the last 24 hours, you know, there's Father's Day, right?
Right.
A very privileged, constructed day of observation and an opportunity to honor one's father, create more shared experiences. So 10 years down the line, you can say, oh my God, remember when? And then when that person passes on, to have this collection, if you will, of shared experiences that are hopefully, you know, soulfully blissful and encouraging. Well, what happens to the millions of girls, children, and women, and boys who don't have a father, who right. never had that, or don't have a good enough father, or don't have a father who can see them, meet them, make memories, and have shared experiences? Well, for me, I remember yesterday I was walking down the street at the farmer's market. Oh, dads and daughters everywhere. I was hearing papa, daddy, dad everywhere I turned. And that was just a moment where my own innocence, I felt my own broken heart. I pulled over to a little alcove and I allowed my innocence to weep and to be felt. So for me, I have the privilege of privileging my hurt. I have the privilege of privileging the good enough mother in me to meet me at the intersection of broken heart. And it doesn't mean that I'm bad because I don't have what 99% of the people in my life and world have. So I gave myself permission to, one, acknowledge other people and be happy for them, to really be proud of the fact that there are human beings who are amazing and they can love their daughters, right? And I could, instead of projecting out what I didn't have and how brokenhearted I am, I stayed with my broken heart and I gave myself permission to recognize my dignity and my humanity in the face of what can feel like devastating emotions.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, as you were saying that, there were so many thoughts running through my mind. And it's interesting that you bring up Father's Day because it was something that and my kids, you know, did things very special for me, which I thought was wonderful. But I was someone who was blessed with two great fathers. But I've also recently lost the second one. I lost one many years ago and lost the second one. So it was a very emotional time. But I think one of the things that I want everybody to understand from what you're saying is that you let yourself deal with it. And I think so many times there's a outpouring that comes from the outside that says, don't deal with it. Just cover it up and make it go away. Pretend like it didn't go away. And it doesn't work. And so I love the fact that you touched on that because you know there's so many other things to talk about in regards to the things that you went through. But understanding that we're all going to go through things, you know, and that some of the best thing that you can do is to just be with it for a little bit. I think that's beautiful.
That is, to me, the only way through. In the book, I have a strategy that I titled Grow Through What You Go Through. And that is an axiom that was coined by New Thought leader Eric Butterworth. And at the end of the day, all I know, I'm myself an autodidactic learner. And I can remember when I resumed my education as an adult, I basically chose a degree that would already be a framework for what I had already done. So in fact, I'd already written the books, I'd already had the success. And so I chose the degree to legitimize that success. But what I needed to understand most is, oh my goodness, I've had to grow through. I've had to teach myself as an autodidactic. I'm a lifelong learner and I believe in adult learning theory and we could go on and on and on. Sure. So for me, it's learning. It's the learning. Every parent on the face of this earth learned to be a parent from someone. It was handed down to them from someone and all the cultural inflections and attributes that inform that parenting were handed down. Well, I'm very fortunate because I made a decision to invest in my legacy as a young woman. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to live in a way where I would strive to be my best mother, the mm-hmm. best self, that mother that probably loved me when I was a baby. There's some memory of that because the body keeps score, right? That's what Bezel says. So there is an archiving of that love in me that shows up in the way that I can attach and attune. And I understand the value of that, the way that I know how to blend with others in my work as a Hoffman teacher. So if my sense of self had been so obliterated that there was no self, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation. Exactly. So yes, it's about growing through what we go through. And for me, the journey has been attaching to myself and reparenting what I attach to in the effort of reinforcing the behaviors and characteristics that I believe to be true about me.
you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed about the book, and you touch on it right in your introduction, because you talk about self-parenting. And I remember reading that and thinking you were very uniquely qualified to talk about this. Because so many of them, I mean, we have different influences, and I talk about, I had two fathers, so I had two different influences, of which I'm very thankful for. But especially now that kids in therapy and kids that I've worked with and stuff, is there's a tendency in the psychological community to blame the parents, you know, to go in and, well, that's because of this. So whatever the problem is, they say, well, it's because of this, and it's because this parent did this or this parent did that. And it appears as though much of what psychology is doing is trying to teach people how to unlearn something. Well, guess what? You didn't have to unlearn anything. You got to start with a clean slate. And so, but I remember reading that again, when you talk in your introduction, you know, you talk about giving the readers opportunities to self-parent. So share a little bit more about some of these opportunities, and any of you out there, if you've gone into therapy and they've said, well, it's this parent's fault or it's this influence that did it, maybe think about this book and some of the things you can get from the standpoint of self-parenting, so that there is no excuse. You are in a position to be able to make those decisions and change whatever it is to be the very best you that you can be. And that's what I got from your book.
Thank you. Well, you know, there was a lot there. There was a lot in what you just said. First of all, I just want to applaud you for so courageously letting it be known that you were raised by two dads. That right there, that's a mic drop for me. And I have nothing but profound reverence for that. And what that means in the face of all of the adversities that we are currently dealing with culturally, mostly. And so I just wanted to say kudos to you for that. And secondly, I forgot your question.
Well, no, it's just, you know, share a little bit more, because you say right in your introduction that you want this book to give readers opportunities to self-parent. So share a little bit about what that, what you mean by that, and what are some of the key things that you think people can go, yes, that's going to help me.
Right. You know, in relationship to permission, meaning what we're allowed to do, what we have consent to do, and from whom, that's what permission is about, is authority, one's relationship to authority. And for me, I have learned to become the subject matter expert of me, to be that center and site of authority. And what that means to me is, for me, there is this whole narrative around the adultification of Black girls. And what I had to learn and what I recognize in exploring the theme of it is, I was expected to be an adult. I was an adult. And yet I was never seen for it. I was never given credit for it. I was never privileged to live from the adultification that I was asked to perform. Well, what I was able to recognize is, like, wait a minute, this needed to be a performance in order to stay safe and to help me matriculate from adolescence to adulthood. But what, that was a pattern, right? As a Hoffman teacher, I work and we work in relationship to patterns. So the pattern for me was, I was set up to be an adult as a child. And then what I needed to look back on, be reflexive about, is like, wait a minute, what are the skills that were inherent in that? So I get that it was a pattern. I get that I was forced to grow up. But what if I stop and I slow down and I get in relationship with that? What is the skill set that I gleaned from that? Oh my God, I became my own authority. I became my own consent. I became the one that would allow or not allow. So that means I'm not going to be governed by systematic thoughts, racism, colorism, sexism, genderism, classism, you know, to hell with it all. But what I am going to do is live who I am. And who that is someone who dreams in equality. Every dream I've ever had, I have, by the grace of all things probable, I have worked with spirit to manifest, because I've not believed that because I was an orphan, I can't do it, because I'm Black, because I'm a woman, because I'm impoverished, because I was at risk of not being able to master the construction of white middle class sentence structure in order to elevate, in order to move up the class system. So I informed myself. I allowed myself. I remember growing up and people would say, Black people don't own dogs. Black people don't go skiing. Black people don't learn how to swim. Well, I was never, ever one to listen and then allow that to become my reality. If anything, I thought I would be the first Black person to own a dog. I'll be the first Black person to swim. I'm going to be the first Black person in a ski club. So I've been the arbiter of the navigator, the cartographer. I believe that my book is, I love cartography. I love it, love it, love it. And I believe that my book, in a lot of ways, is just that, a cartographer's impression of how one might live the world should they, she, or him decide to do it from the site of their own permission, on their own terms, with a courageous heart, filled with empathy and radical compassion.
You know, I absolutely just love this. And I could just, I could listen to you, you know, for much longer than this show is going to go. Why do you think there is such a focus on the division? I mean, you know, so many things that you're talking about, and I know that it drives me crazy that that people buy into it. Many of the stereotypes that you've just mentioned are things that continue to foster these stereotypes and go, well, you shouldn't do this because you're this color or you're this religion or you're this gender or whatever. And again, one of the things that I love about the book is that it's, you know, you do not accept any of these things. And it seems like there are a lot of us that believe the same thing, but it's very difficult to get it in mainstream media. It's very difficult to get it when there appears to be people who are benefiting from continuing to push this old, tired, negative agenda. And, you know, and from my standpoint, we need you to be on a larger platform. We need people to be listening to those that are putting the information that you're putting out, and not this old, tired, divisive stuff that seems to still get more airtime.
Wow, you drop a lot of wisdom. Your wisdom has a lot of depth, breadth, width, and length. And it lands with a punch. So bear with me as I let it land and unfold instead of running right to believe that I have the answer. So it's amazing what you just said. And I think what I have discovered in my experience as a social agent, journeying through this reality, is, you know, in relationship to white privilege. David Foster Wallace says, a fish does not know it's in water. And I say, well, what happens when the fish does know it's in water? Then what? What type of psychological quagmire? What type of psychological dissonance? What type of psychological or existential angst will that fish then be in? And how will that fish grapple? And how much skin in the game is that fish going to be willing to put in to permission and epistemic stretch, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know. So instead of relying on what you are speaking of, it's called situational knowledge, knowledge that is concretized, knowledge that serves to benefit a certain percentage, a certain ruling class, because any time a particular way or thinking or an ideology is the governing way of being, it is concretized. It is situated in a way that privileges those who worship it. So what you're asking is, in some ways, what I hear you asking is, to what God are we willing to serve? And what are the benefits in being a bystander to the actions, the behaviors, the belief systems that God dictates? It's difficult to have all the good, to taste all the good, and then be asked to give that up, to share that. It's like, but why? Why would I want to share just because you tell me it's good? Just because you're saying, first I have to buy into what you're saying. And in order for me to buy into what you're saying, then I have to grapple with the existential angst that, have I actually been party to this? Are you saying that I need to challenge my worldview? Are you saying that the identity that I have constructed around this belief system is false? So basically you're saying that as a human, as a collective, as a society, that 87 million people our beliefs, our sense of knowing, our identities are wrapped around the axle of the wrong Godhead? Because if that's what you're saying, well, you're asking me to do something that feels improbable. So I think
what I was going to say is, and I'm not asking you necessarily to do anything different. I'm asking people out there to give you a platform so that they can see that there are, there are other ways to look at things, and to be able to hear the concept of going in and looking at things and not being labeled and not accepting a label that somebody might put on you.
I get it.
You know,
I understand what you're asking. You know, it's really interesting that you say that. You know, I woke up this morning on the right side of having feelings. And, you know, for 17 years, I shepherded my movie. When I went to the number one talent management agency in the world in Beverly Hills, and so a friend of mine gave me a cut in line to go and meet with this particular agent. And this person, who was a Black woman, said, there are no Black people who can play you. And I said, well, then I will wait until a Black person is born. And little did I know that a young woman was 3 years old and that she would be the person to take the role on. But I was willing to bet that what this woman was telling me was not, it was her truth. but it wasn't mine.
Exactly.
And just because it's her truth doesn't mean I need to adopt it. Mm-hmm. So the movie got made, and, you know, this may be a stretch, but I kind of want to put it in the context of how this thing called hegemony and how this thing called privilege works. 17 years, me, I kept it up. I kept it up. I created a one-woman show to keep this story alive, to keep my story alive in every way, shape, or form. I stretched, on and on and on and on. I performed my one-woman show in a mausoleum around dead people. And in order for this story to have legs in Hollywood, to, you know, just to be seen for the story. Finally, the movie gets made. And I'm thinking, oh my God, now I'm going to elevate out of foster care, and I'm going to be able to collaborate with TED Woman, TED Talk. Like, people are going to give me an opportunity. They're going to see how I saved myself, how, you know, I put a firebrand kind of thinking into the world, so to speak. I got to tell you, yesterday, I'm on an IG with the person who wrote the music by chance from a fluke opportunity for the trailer. So I'm on IG live with this beautiful genius woman, beautiful genius voice. And my instincts told me, ask her, when did she begin her journey for making soundtracks for films? Because when I looked on her IG, I just kept seeing these soundtracks for film. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. She says to me, your movie saved my life. Your movie, because of that soundtrack, has changed everything. And I was proud and happy for her, but silently it broke my heart, because I did not get anything close to the opportunities she got. And it was one of those moments of reckoning, like, wow, you know, wow, I'm happy. And I'm like, well, what do I have to do to get to that bigger platform? What kind of black tax do I have to pay to be seen as legit, to have a seat at the table? So this book for me is about building that table. This book for me is not being in a constant state of yearning and being seen and wanting something from people who may not want to give it to me. You know, this is about hopefully someone reading this book, someone with power, someone who would like to collaborate with me, someone who would like to have conferences and permission teas and permission lunches, and someone who would really feel the necessity of what it means, especially coming out of COVID and this global pandemic. What would it look like if each of us legitimately made the decision to grow ourselves up, put skin in the game, and pay forward this thing called common humanity, this thing called dignity, this thing called equity, this thing calling stepping into your privilege, opening the door, and not being afraid of scaling that to someone who, like myself, who could use that.
We're speaking with Regina Louise, and we're talking about her new book, Permission Granted: Kick-Ass Strategies to Bootstrap Your Way to Unconditional Self-Love. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to...
Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that is legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers Network. My guest is Regina Louise. And so, Regina, I wanted to touch on something, and you spoke after I mentioned about having had two wonderful dads in my life. I also have a very beautiful and wonderful mom who is still alive that I visit with, because she's in a home at this time. So my situation for ending up with two dads was my mom having gotten a divorce and bringing another one into my life when I was at a young age. But I looked at it, and she was wonderful to present that, is she looked at it as just having more love in my life, which made me think of something you talk about in your book, because you refer to love formations. And I thought it was nice. You've coined a phrase. Can you give us an example of how you use this in your own life?
That's beautiful. Thank you. You know what? And by the way, thank you for clarifying, because I was so convinced that you had two dads, because you had two dads. Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you for that course correction. So, love formations. Wow. I love love formations. Love formations to me is, as I said, and you said in your introduction, that I'm a Hoffman teacher. And what that basically means is I work with individuals who are serious about changing the directions of their lives based on entrenched ways of behaving that they learned or that were handed down to them from their families of origin. And, you know, over time, and so as a teacher, I have learned to question and explore reflexively, what is love? We toss this thing around like it's nobody's business. And even as that teacher, I'm like, wait, what is love? I need to understand what love is before I, you know, stand on the pulpit and start, you know, and preaching, if you will, to what love is and isn't. And over time, and also, people would say self-love, self-love, self-love. And I became suspect of that, because self-love, in my understanding, can only be a reflection of the love we received. So when we start talking about this thing called self-love, what are we really saying? What are we really asking? What about the person who was abused? What about the person who learned that love is to be dragged down the street? I mean, there are codependents for a reason. There are places like Al-Anon and AA for a reason, because we tend to do to ourselves what was modeled for us. So for a codependent, self-love is being dependent on that partner to mistreat them in a way so that they get that hit. That could be a form of self-love. So I just became suspect of it. And I thought, I know that what I mean by that is taking that idea of love from being a Hoffman teacher. And one of the ways we break love down is love is the flowing, the rendering, the outpouring from the heart of emotional goodness to ourselves first and then to another. I thought about, I had to see, I can reiterate this and I can ape this, but do I feel this? Is this mm-hmm. the truth of what love is for me? So I've thought about it. I still think about it. But what came out of my being reflexive with it, you know, positing this idea and then going into deep praxis is, I am the heart of emotional goodness, mm-hmm. no matter what happens. It's like yesterday standing, as I said, in a triggered state from hearing Papa, Daddy, and seeing it. I did not go to where that feeling might have taken me if I didn't know love, which is I'm not good, I'm bad, and it's in the pejorative. But instead, I went to love, to the heart of my own emotional goodness. And I was able then to stand firm in what is true for and about me. I am loved, I am love, and I am lovable. What my father did or did not do had absolutely nothing to do with me. And it's important that I recognize the healthy narcissism that went awry in that, right? Because we as children, we develop, we need that healthy state of narcissism to come into our own. In my case, it went awry, meaning I thought I was bad, all bad. All bad, down to the core, personal shame. But to recognize that that had nothing to do with me. So love formations is understanding what it means to connect to the heart of your own goodness, beyond the patterns, beyond the abandonments, beyond the divorces, beyond the being left, beyond the heartbreak, beyond all of that is a place that I, along with everybody else on the planet, can return to and anchor more in that place called love. So for me, love formations is to affirm in the firmness of the truth that I am good. And so I have a mirror that I created mm-hmm. for the VIP swag boxes. And the mirror says, love formations, dear sweet child, my inner essence, I love you. I am here for you. I am you. So in holding this mirror and doing the love formations while reading it, all there are words just coming, you know, reciting these words. Mm-hmm. But when the user looks beyond the words, they can look into their own innocence, because mirrors have that effect, especially yes. when there's something etched on the mirror, it's mm-hmm. we're saying it. So it's having that mirroring experience, that attunement that one might have with their own parent.
So is there a place where somebody can get one of these? Because as you're saying that, I'm thinking, I want to get some of those. I want to be able to hand those out.
Right.
Can you get them at your website? Is there a place where we can get them?
Right. So I have a few left, and my website is being reconfigured to now have a e-commerce component to it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm working on that.
Good. Okay. Well, then we're going to need to talk about that some more, or maybe have you come back on when people can start ordering from there, because I think that's incredibly beneficial to lots of people out there. And I would love to just have them as a great way to pass things out to people.
Right.
And you're not saying that you have all the answers. No. The answers are right here.
I love right. it. The it's answers right here. Are here.
Right
and if
here.
If you're willing to get intimate with yourself in the moment, and I bump up against students who cannot understand, they just cannot fathom what this thing called imagination is, you know, because mm-hmm. a lot of people have been shamed in childhood for their imaginations, right? You know, I'm oftentimes reminded what Einstein says, imagination is more important than knowledge. So when I'm working with students who are bumping up against some of the things that we invite them to do, or clients in my private coaching session, I literally will stop what I'm doing And I will say this. Come with me and you'll see a world of pure imagination. Close your eyes. Go inside to your world of pure imagination. Because in me, this thing that we live in, this constructed reality that we live in, originated in the imagination of the original Imagineer.
And by the way, I love that song from Willy Wonka. So, but we have a question that has come in through instant message. And again, I want to thank those people that take the time to do this. But I'm also looking at the clock. We have about 2 minutes. So this one reads, I too was in foster care most of my childhood as my mother had an alcohol addiction and she just could not overcome. I sometimes wonder if I carry some deep fear of failure because I could not help my mother. The reason I say this is that after finishing college and saving to start my own business, I have this failure to launch approach. It says, I just can't muster up the self-confidence to make it happen. Every time I begin the process, I seem to manifest a distraction or another excuse to delay my plans. Does your book deal with situations such as this? And this is from Jonas in Nevada.
What a beautiful question. Yes, my book does build and deal with things such as that. But also, Jonas, I would slow it down and watch what you're affirming. It's because I heard in that lots of affirmations. I couldn't help my, I failed at helping my mother. I saved to start a business, but when I get into it, I become distracted, failed distraction. And I would slow it all down. And I would turn to what is really going on. Is it that you failed to help your mother? Or is it that you were left to be parentified and the responsibilities are flipped? And the truth is your mother failed to help you, which is why you ended up in foster care in the first time as a result of your mother's inability to help herself. And now that pattern is showing up as you being unable to help yourself. So that would be the pattern I would say, or the behavior I would say is handed down, is you're led to believe that it was your first of all responsibility to save or help your mother. And then when you failed, you're carrying that burden. But the truth of the matter is, it was really your mother's responsibility to save herself. So how much of you are potentially carrying your mother's failure? And maybe, just maybe, Jonas, that's a way to stay connected to your mother. It's like when we settle for crumbs unwittingly, we settle for crumbs. Having that tiny little bit is better than having nothing at all. And I talk about that in a strategy where I stop smoking. Because the smoking was a way for me to stay connected to my mother.
Gotcha. Yes. And actually, just a quick add to that, because I had added another quote, but there's a quote by Roger Crawford that says, being challenged in life is inevitable. Being defeated is optional.
There it is.
So
there it is.
Regina, thank you so much. I just really appreciate everything that you're doing. What is the best way for people to connect with you, the ones that either to get the book or just to connect with you and learn more about what you're doing?
I love to see people on Instagram at The Real Regina Louise, the TheRealReginaLouise, as well as Facebook. But I am all about Instagram. So that's a great way. And as I said, my website is being reconstructed, but you can visit me at www.iamreginalouise.com. So come on, y'all. Let's hang out. Let's chop it up. And I will do what I can to support you on this journey.
All right. And for everybody out there, if you are driving, do not try to write that down. You can go to answers.network and we will have all of that information there for you. Again, Regina, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Yes. Now, for everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we are going to be joined by Chris and Holly Santillo to discuss their new book, Teaching Children to Become Resilient in an Era of Detachment and Dependence. And you can visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can just subscribe to the show, which I highly recommend. You can subscribe through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, BeatChew, YugiTube, anyway, UGETUBE, and many other popular podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It does wonders for us as well as for other people who might be listening. And again, the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest shows. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and make a positive difference in somebody's life today. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.